122.
Number 9.
Let me encourage you tonight to open up in your Bible to 1 Samuel chapter 13. 1 Samuel chapter 13. Good to see all of you tonight. And Delanne is with us in spirit. She's not here in presence, but she's here in spirit. I think that most of you know that my wife is healthy as a horse. I would not say that in her presence that she's healthy as a horse, but she is in good health. But she does have one problem, and that is that she is very susceptible to migraine headaches. And when she gets them, and there's a number of things that can trigger them, they can be really debilitating. And that's why she is not with us tonight. And unless she's out of town somewhere, a lot of Sunday nights, if you should not see her, if you were to make a guess and say, I bet Delanne may have a migraine, you would probably be right. But anyway, she's with us. Israel wanted a king. They wanted to be like the other nations. And God had His prophet Samuel explain to the people what it would be like if they had a king. He wanted them to be aware of all of the disadvantages, all of the things that were going to happen if they had a king. But they insisted, we want a king. We want to be like the other nations. And no doubt, very high up in their thinking about why they needed a king, why a king would be good, is that he could help protect them. He could lead them against their enemies. He could help them conquer the nations that were round about them. And God told Samuel, he said, they haven't rejected you, and you should not be full of sorrow as though they've rejected you from ruling over them. They have rejected me from being their king. And God chose, I believe, a man that He thought had the aptitude to be a good king. He chose a man that at first, when you read the history of Saul, seems to have been a very humble individual. He was an individual that was quite surprised that Samuel should come and seek him out and talk to him about occupying such a high office. He spoke of his family as being the least of the families of the tribe of Benjamin. And he kind of acted in a way that the tribe of Benjamin itself was not a great tribe. And there had been some problems in their history that we know of. But God said, this is a man, a good man, that I'm choosing. This is a man that I think can direct you and can lead you. And then as we begin to read in the book of 1 Samuel, we find out that Saul was not the man that we had hoped that he would be. There were some decisions that Saul made that were not good decisions. Over in the book of 1 Samuel, in chapter 13, we read about one of those decisions. When they were going to go out and battle against the Philistines, and Samuel said, I'm going to come. And we'll offer up a sacrifice, and after that sacrifice is offered up to the Lord, then you can take the armies of Israel and go forth in battle against the Philistines. And when you look at the story, it is easy for us to feel some sympathy for the decision that Saul made. He waited for Samuel to come, and he did not come. And he waited a little bit longer for Samuel to come. And the prophet still did not come. And let me just read a few of the verses, and I'm kind of just picking these out, a few of them. But look in chapter 13 of 1 Samuel, starting with verse 5. Then the Philistines gathered together to fight with Israel, 30,000 chariots and 6,000 horsemen. That's quite a formidable host of men and equipment that we're talking about here, and people as the sand which is on the seashore in multitude. And they came up and they encamped at Michmash to the east of Beth Avon. And when the men of Israel saw that they were in danger, for the people were distressed, then the people hid in caves, in thickets, in rocks, in holes, and in pits. They were afraid. They saw this great enemy coming against them. It looked to them like defeat was imminent. How in the world could they avoid not being overrun by this tremendous force of the Philistines? And they hid. And the inspired writer is not tempted here to tell us, well, the men of Israel, they were brave. And they took up their armor and they picked up their spears. And they said, God is with us. And let's go out and fight against these enemies. God will be with us. He'll give us the victory. It doesn't say that. It says instead that they hid. They hid. Have you ever hidden anywhere? I don't mean when you're playing hide and seek, when you're younger. But I mean, has there ever been circumstances in your life where that you kind of wanted to find a place to kind of find refuge? Find a place where you could kind of back off. You didn't want to go out and meet the foe. You didn't want to go out and meet the enemy face to face. We've come up with some convenient terms in our day. I'm not sure that all of those terms are necessarily as complimentary as they're meant to be. We speak of being non-confrontational as a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful trait. There are certain things that we should not be controversial about. There absolutely are some things that we should not be controversial about. We should not be controversial about things that have to do with personal pride. But brethren, there are some things that we need to be willing to stand up. And we need to say, no, this is where I stand on this particular subject. And this is how I feel about this particular matter. And I hope that I can show by my spirit, I hope that I can show by my attitude that I am trying to be as meek as possible in this matter. At the same time, I am making a stand on this matter. I do think that this is important. In a lot of places in our day, we are taught, stay as far away from controversy as possible. Controversy is always, always wrong. It is never good to be confrontational. I don't think that those people have read very much about the life of Christ. And whether or not Jesus was ever confrontational. Or about the Apostle Paul and some of the things that he wrote. I don't know that some of the texts that he wrote could be regarded as being non-confrontational. But here we have a situation where the people are afraid. They go and they hide anywhere they can find a place to hide. They hide in caves, in thickets, in rocks, in holes, in pits. Why do you go and hide, brethren? Why do you hide? Because you are afraid. You are afraid. You're afraid about what may happen to you. And that's what is happening here. Some of the Hebrews, verse 7, crossed over the Jordan to the land of Gad and Gilead. As for Saul, he was still in Gilgal, and all the people followed him, trembling. Here's our king, stands a head higher than any of the rest of us. He's already led us in victory before. This is the one that God anointed to be our ruler, to be our king, not somebody else. God anointed him. And the people followed him. Some people followed him, but they followed him trembling, is what the text says. Then he waited 7 days according to the time set by Samuel. Verse 8, but Samuel did not come to Gilgal. And the people were scattered from him. I, in my mind, can see this happening just kind of gradually. First day, a few people begin to scatter. Second day, a few more. And as the 7 days go by, there are fewer and fewer people that are standing with him. And so Saul said, verse 9, bring a burnt offering and peace offerings here to me. And he offered the burnt offering. He had not been authorized by God to do this. He was the king of this people. He was the leader of this people, especially as they confronted the Philistines and were going to engage in battle. It happened, verse 10, as soon as he had finished presenting the burnt offering, that Samuel came. And Saul went out to meet him, that he might greet him. And Samuel said, what have you done? Saul said, when I saw that the people were scattered from me, and that you did not come within the days appointed, and that the Philistines gathered together at Michmash, then I said, the Philistines will now come down on me at Gilgal, and I have not made supplication to the Lord. Therefore, I felt compelled, and I offered a burnt offering. Now, if I were going through the Bible, and I were selecting what I thought might be good excuses, maybe the word excuse is not the word I should choose here. But if I were selecting good reasons for someone doing something that ends up being contrary to the will of God, this would be one of those that I would place near the top. Here is Saul as a man, reasoning as a man, looking at things, looking at the circumstances. Samuel is supposed to be here, and he isn't. The people are scattering. The enemy is present. What am I going to do? I haven't asked for God's blessing on us. What in the world am I going to do? And his decision here is, I don't want to do this, but I feel compelled. And I offered up a burnt offering. And Samuel said to Saul, verse 13, you have done foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which he commanded you.
For now the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever, but now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought for himself a man after his own heart, and the Lord has commanded him to be commander over his people because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you.
Saul, this is a black and white issue. You're not seeing it that way, but it is. It is a black and white issue. You were not to offer up this sacrifice. But you decided, under the circumstances,
you decided under, in your own mind, you decided to offer up the sacrifice. Well, things go downhill rapidly when you read the history of Saul. In chapter 15, we read about Saul going out against the Amalekites and about how that God commanded him to destroy all of them, destroy them completely, leave none of them, leave none of their animals behind. The commandment of God was very clear about what to do. There was no room in what God said for anything other than complete and total annihilation of the Amalekites and all of their animals. Well, very similar to 1 Samuel chapter 13, along comes Samuel to the scene. And I'm not going to take the time to read all of this, but I would ask you, maybe if you have time later this week, to think about it and to go back and reread it and ask yourself whether there are some things here for us to ponder, to consider. But if you come down, beginning in verse 29, he tells him how that... let me start with verse 27. As Samuel turned around to go away, Saul seized the edge of his robe and it tore. He knew that Samuel was displeased with him. He had condemned him. He had rebuked him. He was about to walk away. And Saul does not allow him to walk away. He grabs the edge of his robe and it tore. And Samuel said to him, verse 28, "The Lord has torn the kingdom of Israel from you today." You want me to stay. You want me to listen to your excuses. You want me to listen to your reasons for why you went ahead and did what you did. And you've blamed it on the people. He said, "The Lord has torn the kingdom away from you today, and it has given it to a neighbor of yours who is better than you." Talking about the character of David. "And also the strength of Israel will not lie nor relent, for he is not a man that he should relent." God does not relent. God had made this decision, this definite decision, in regard to this matter. Coming down to verse 34, "Then Samuel went to Ramah, and Saul went up to his house at Gibeah of Saul. And Samuel went no more to see Saul until the day of his death. Nevertheless, Samuel mourned for Saul, and the Lord regretted that he had made Saul king over Israel." Samuel felt terrible about it. No doubt he was filled with hope when the appointment was first made. He thought, "God is giving us the best that we've got. He is choosing a man to watch over us that will be the kind of man that he needs to be. We are very fortunate." And it grieved Samuel deeply because of Saul's sin and because of God's decision to remove him from being king over Israel. When you move to chapter 16, beginning in verse 1, God moves on with His plans, with His purposes for Israel. "The Lord said to Samuel, 'How long will you mourn for Saul, seeing I have rejected him from reigning over Israel?' I don't know if Samuel ever dared. I do not want to presume that he ever dared to approach God and say, God, can't you forgive him? Can't? But he says, how long are you going to continue to mourn about this matter? I've rejected him. He doesn't have the right kind of heart. His reign over my people is not going to be acceptable. How long are you going to mourn about this matter? I've rejected him from reigning over Israel. Fill your horn with oil and go. I am sending you to Jesse, the Bethlehemite, for I have provided myself a king among his sons. You go on. There are others that do have the right kind of heart. And I'm choosing one of them to be king. And Samuel said, verse 2, and how can I go if Saul hears? He will kill me. But the Lord said, take a heifer with you and say, I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. And then invite Jesse to the sacrifice. And I will show you what you shall do. You shall anoint for me the one I name to you. I'm going to make the choice. You're going to be the one who in my behalf anoints him. But I'm making the choice. I'm making the decision about who is going to rule. So Samuel did what the Lord said, and he went to Bethlehem, and the elders of the town trembled at his coming. And they said, do you come peaceably? It was a little bit frightening to have Samuel come to their town. Wondering why. Why is he coming? And he said, peaceably. I have come to the sacrifice. I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. Sanctify yourselves and come with me to the sacrifice. And then he consecrated Jesse and his sons. And he invited them to the sacrifice. And so it was when they came, when Jesse and his sons came, he looked at Eliab and he said, surely the Lord's anointed is before him. I don't know what Eliab looked like, but I am making an educated guess that he probably was a nice, tall, strong-looking guy and looked like he might be a good military leader. I don't know. But I think there was something impressive about his personal presence. So that Samuel who had looked at Saul and anointed him and you know, now he looks at Eliab and he thinks, well, this is the one. I am confident this is the one that God will use. The Lord's anointed is before me. Surely this is the one that God wants. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance or at his physical stature, because I have refused him. What kind of man do you think Samuel was? Do you think he was a deeply spiritual man? I think he was. Do you think he was someone that was able to say, well, you know what, I had looked at Saul previously and I thought, surely, you know, that, all right, this is going to be a great leader for God's people. And I was wrong about that. I was wrong about that. God says to Samuel, don't look at his appearance, don't look at his physical stature, because I've refused him. You ever been at a game on in PE
where the coach says, all right, we're going to have a game, and you're going to be one of the captains, and you're going to be the captain, and we're going to choose up teams. And you get the first pick, then you get the next two picks, and you get the next two picks, and you get the next two picks, and we're going to go back and forth, and we're going to choose teams. And a few of you may be like me, I felt like I was the last one picked on some of those occasions. I felt like sometimes people looked at me and thought, too small, too slow, too weak, too whatever else you want to, you know, you're looking for. We don't need them on our team. Let's go with the guys that'll help us out. Brethren, we sometimes make judgments that are very superficial about people. And we base them on standards that the world says these are acceptable standards. These are the standards you should look for. And that may be in athletics, it may be in some other arena of life, some other part of life, but people say, this is what we're looking for, this is what we want. And you've got your list out there, and you go down your list, and you say, all right, this is what we want, and this is what we want, and this is what we want. And sometimes we find out, you know what? Our list didn't turn out right. There were some other factors that we couldn't see. There were some other things we couldn't know. We couldn't know what was in the person's heart. We couldn't know what kind of determination they had. We couldn't know if they were coachable. Some of you have done some coaching. One of the most important things that coaches look for, not how big, not how fast, it's how coachable. How coachable. Is this kid going to listen to me? Is this kid going to be willing to learn what I tell him? And accept that this is the way this works. This is the way this game is played. Sometimes we use the wrong standards. And here's Samuel, and he's looking at Eliab, and he thinks, man, look at this guy. Wow. Supposed to be one of the sons of Jesse. Here's his oldest son. Boy, looks good to me. All right. I'm sold, Lord. This is the guy. And God says to him, don't look at the appearance or his physical nature. I've refused him. The Lord does not see as man sees. The Lord looks at does not look. I'm sorry. Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. God doesn't care if you've got a PhD from the finest university in this country. He doesn't care if you've got a mantle full of awards for being an outstanding speaker. He doesn't care about all of those things that men of the world look to and think, wow, those things are impressive, those things are important. That is really saying something about that individual. God says, I look at the heart of the individual, and that's how I measure a man, and that's what counts to me. And God said, no, he's not the one. I'm looking for one with the right kind of heart. And so one by one, the sons are brought past Samuel. And one by one, God says, that's not the one. It's not the one. And I can just kind of imagine that maybe Samuel's becoming a little bit exasperated with this. Really, Lord? We've gone through the group of boys, and you're not really, Lord?
and you haven't picked any of them out? Samuel said to Jesse, verse 11, are all the young men here? Are these all your sons? And then he said, there remains yet the youngest. Jesse was not expecting David to be. I've got another son, but he's out there keeping the sheep. He's the youngest. He's the least impressive. He's the least important of all of my sons. I thought you were looking to see something outstanding among my sons, and here are the ones that I would present to you. But yeah, there's another son. And he's out there keeping the sheep. He's the youngest. And Samuel said to Jesse, send and bring him, for we will not sit down until he comes here. So he sent and brought him in. He was ruddy, with bright eyes, good looking. And the Lord said, arise, anoint him, for this is the one. And then Samuel took the horn of oil and he anointed him in the midst of his brothers. And the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from the Lord. And the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. So Samuel arose and he went to Ramah. Aren't you glad that you don't have to be tall and good looking and athletically built and all of that to serve the Lord? To march at the front of the Lord's army, and to be chosen as a servant of the Lord, and to have the Lord say to you, I've got work for you to do. I've got a task for you to do. Aren't you glad that you don't have to be the one that finished at the very top of your class and had all of these accolades that the world might want to give you and hold up and say, oh, look at how impressive this individual is. God does not look at men the way the world does. God looks at the heart. And it is what we are in our hearts that matters. And if we ever get to the point in thinking about spirituality, the way that men look at things in the world, we're using the wrong set of standards. God would say to Saul, you are rejected, you're not allowed to be my king, you wouldn't listen to me. I gave you directions. And you wouldn't listen to me. We've got to have hearts that will listen to God. Over in the book of Romans in chapter 8, we see two different mindsets that are set against one another by the Apostle Paul, as he speaks about those that are pleasing to God and those who cannot please God. And he describes the one by describing those who have a carnal mindset, and he describes others as those who have a more spiritual mindset. And I'm not going to take the time, because it's nearly gone, to read the passage, but I want to look at a couple of the verses with you. In Romans 8, beginning in verse 5, the Apostle Paul writes, for those who live according to the flesh, they set their mind on the things of the flesh. There are those who living in the flesh is what life is all about. And that is demonstrated by the fact that they have set their mind on the things of the flesh. But those who live according to the Spirit, the things of the Spirit. That's where they have set their mind. For to be carnally minded is death, but to be spiritually minded is life and peace. Because the carnal mind is enmity against God, for it is not subject to the law of God, nor indeed can be. And so then, those that are in the flesh, they cannot please God. Now, brethren, what kind of a mindset do we have? What are our minds set on? Are they set on the things of the flesh, or are they set on the things of the Spirit? What kind of heart do we have? What is it drawn towards? What's most important to it? What's dearest to it? Is it the things of the flesh, or is it the things of the Spirit? Over in Colossians chapter 3, a well-known passage, an important passage though, Paul has been talking about, or does go on to talk about, maybe is the way I should say this, the difference, the dichotomy between those that can please God and those who cannot please God. Where does he start? Where is his beginning point in this discussion? It is in the mind. It is in the heart. In Colossians 3, beginning in verse 1, he says, "If then you are raised with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ is sitting at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on things on the earth. For you have died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. Therefore, put to death your members which are on the earth, fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desire, covetousness, which is idolatry. Because of these things, the wrath of God is coming upon the son of disobedience." Brethren, what are our minds centered on? What are they focused on? What is it that we're seeking? What is it that's dearest to us? What is it that's most important to us? Is it those things that are above? Or is it those things that are here on the earth? Spiritually, we have put to death. We are supposed to have put to death the old man. And we've been raised new creatures in Jesus Christ. There is a new way of life that we live due to a new mindset, due to a new heart. Where are we, brethren, in our heart? If people were to look at our life, if they were to say, "Okay, let's sit down and let's break it down. If a doctor were doing this and saying, "Okay, there's a problem here and we're picking up a problem and we need to diagnose this thing and we need to see what's going on. And I need to go back and I need to look at a history of things and I need to know about your diet and I need to know about your daily activities and I need to know about this factor and that factor, and we're going to do some tests to substantiate what's going on, what is physically going on." Where would we be spiritually? If we had to sit down with the Lord and say, "Here's where I'm at spiritually, and here's what goes on with my life, and here's what my daily life is all about," where would we be spiritually? Appreciate the kind way that you've listened to these things tonight. Brethren, these last few lessons are focused on our heart and whether or not our heart is what God wants it to be or not. Doesn't matter that men might be impressed by it. Doesn't matter if a good man like Samuel might look and say, "Oh, surely the Lord's anointed. Here he must be." Doesn't matter if God looks inside of our heart and says, "Not really. Not really." We're going to sing a song of invitation that's been selected. If you're here tonight, you're not a Christian, you're ready to obey the gospel, we'd like to encourage you to that end. If, as a child of God, there are things that are not what they need to be in your life, maybe you haven't reflected the right kind of heart, then we appeal to you to make whatever corrections are necessary. If you need to ask God's forgiveness in private, then we hope that you would do that. There is something of a more public nature that needs to be addressed, and we hope that you would take care of that. But we do hope that any that would need to respond to an invitation, that you might come right now while we stand and while we sit.